Chapter 5. The Queen.
The sheets were smooth white satin. The bed was large and soft. Through the open window I saw the blue sky, a more translucent blue than I was used to, beautiful in its novelty to me. A breeze of mild, tangy air blew in. When I raised myself on the stack of soft pillows, the lower part of the window revealed the sea, a darker blue than the sky above it, speckled with white sails, busy and calm, endless, eternal, soothing. Her hand, gently, pushed me down again. 3 days of mourning, she said. 3 days for me to recover in solitude from the shock of my father's sudden death from heart attack. 3 days before I have to take up my duties as the Queen and begin to console his subjects, my subjects now, for their tragic loss. She smiled. 3 days in which to succumb to my grief undisturbed. She half bent over me. The tip of the index finger of her left hand trailed the thin red line down from my throat, slowly, unstoppably. Not that for all in the world I would have wanted it to stop. I almost winced when she reached my clitoris. Not from pain, but from remembered pain. Not from the shallow cut from her knife, but from the agony of the awl. A scar had begun to form on it, and I thought that it had lost some of its sensitivity, or all of it. It hadn't been important, but I could feel it now, feel her, as she gently circled it, gently pinched it between two fingers, as she brought her face against mine, covered my mouth with hers, now only touched me lightly with one finger again, and then, with sudden force, thrust into me with her fingernail. Screaming agony spread through me. I cried. I gripped her with my arms. My tongue filled her mouth. I pressed myself against her hand, her body, her soul. I sank into an ocean of orgasmic ecstasy. "I want to be honest with you," I said to her later, as we lay exhausted and entwined. When you stood before me with your knife and let it run down my body, I showed you my trust, didn't I? But I did not. At any moment, had you changed your grip and tried to stab me, I could have killed you. I know, she said, and I had trusted you. She took my hand and led me out of the bed, onto the plush white carpet. A comb from her nightstand served for a knife. She touched me with it lightly. "But I want to see it," she said. "Show me." With a knife, I would have had to break her arm. With a comb, and just for demonstration, I could simply throw her to the ground. The thick carpet would protect her from harm from the impact. I moved. A gasp, a sudden jolt, a swirling of space, too swift to register before it was over, and I found myself face down on the carpet, her knees on my back, my arms bent, helpless in her grip. A moment later I was free, on my back, regaining my breath, and she smiled down upon me, before she bent down and kissed me.
How?
My breath had not fully returned from the fall, from the kiss. "Trust and honesty from now on, between us," she said. She stood up, went to the window, and pulled on a cord that I had thought was there to remove the curtains. "I want you to meet someone," she said. "No need to get dressed," she added, as she saw me look around for my nightdress, which I think I had worn when she had brought me to this room. The door opened and a man stepped in. Tall, dark-haired, dressed in soft black clothes, with regal bearing. He regarded me kindly as I stood there, naked, staring at him. "May I introduce to you?" she smiled at me. "From today on, the commander of the Royal Guard, formerly the black sheep of the family, my dear little brother." He bowed. I just kept staring. I knew now who had trained her, who had taught her her fighting skills. I suddenly knew a lot more now, too, though I would need some time to fully comprehend it. I'm glad to see you here," I stammered. "I am glad too," said Almagest.